Hi, I'm Chief Bob Vasquez.
And I'm Dr. Jose Lugo Santiago. Welcome to Leaders and Futures. Let us have a new kind of conversation, one about leading as futures emerge, are yet to happen, or plainly need to be reimagined.
Someone has said that the best way to predict the future is to create it. Although it's impossible to predict the future, one thing is certain, you must lead in it. It's time to think differently about leading.
This podcast is powered by the Institute for Leadership and Strategic Foresight.
Let's get started with today's discussion on leaders and futures.
Well, Lugo, it's good to see you again, man. I really look forward to having these weekly conversations about stuff. Although it's not all of the stuff we should be talking about, probably like getting up early and exercising and all that kind of stuff. Mm. But anyway, good to see you.
I did not do that because, as we're airing this, today is President's Day. So I took some time to do something. So, I mean, our viewers are going to listen to this tomorrow.
Yes.
So I think we need to talk a little bit about this thing about precedence.
About the precedence
and why I did not get my exercise early in the morning today. Okay. Because it was President's Day. Wait a minute. Is that an excuse?
Yes, it is.
Maybe a little one.
As Stephen Covey taught me, you know what you create when you rationalize.
Rational lies.
Correct. So get over it. It is
right.
And happy President's Day to you. I hope you have a good day.
Thank you.
Although, likewise. You know, some of you have to get a day off and some of us, I'm always off. Mm. But that's okay. I worked a lot harder than you did. Mm-hmm. Anyway, speaking of President's Day, I had the great occasion of meeting President Reagan back in, what would it have been, 97, something like that. But let me tell you the story, because I think it's a pretty good story. I was on active duty, and I was stationed. I had just made chief, and I was stationed at the March Air Force Base in California. And Lieutenant Colonel Denny Leindecker was my boss at the time, who was a genius. But anyway, he calls me into his office one day, and I'm, okay, what's up, sir? And he shows me a letter, and the letterhead says, President of the United States. And immediately it gets my attention, you know, and I go on to read it, and it's from President Reagan, former President Reagan, who is inviting us, the band, to go to his office in Pasadena. I'm not sure where in California, you know, because he retired back in California, but he wanted to say thank you for all the support that we gave him while he was president, which I'm thinking, wow, that's pretty good for a president. I don't care which president. To summon you to say, hey, I want to thank you guys. Please come to my office. So then he asked me, so what do you think, Chief? Should we go? I said, sir, I'm on the bus. I don't know if you're going. I'm going, and I'm taking the band. So you can do whatever you want. So I was being facetious with him. Mm-hmm. So anyway, we go. We set up the date and all that stuff, and we go. And we go to his office, and we're all, I don't know how many of us, 30, 40, 50, 60, maybe, in this big room waiting for him. And I don't know if you've ever known people, Lugo, who, when they enter your space, they change the atmosphere. Everything changes. The
presence. That's called presence.
Presence. Exactly. Presence. So he comes in, and an aide opens the door. He comes in, and immediately the room changed. It's like, whoa, what happened here? And he walks in. We have some small introductions and all that kind of stuff. And he starts telling stories. Now, if you remember, you were around when Reagan was around. He was a great storyteller, just amazing. Mm-hmm. In fact, I'm going to tell you the effect that he had on me. But anyway, he starts telling stories. It was like, and people who have worked for him, and I've known people who have worked for him directly, say that he made people feel like he was Uncle Ronnie. You know, from what I understand, his secretary is going to... the helicopter, what is it, the Marine One, would land. They would all call out to each other, Uncle Ronnie's back, Uncle Ronnie's back. So anyway, he comes in and he starts telling us stories. And I don't know, for 45 minutes, we hear all these stories. And it's just amazing, huh? All of the stuff that he's telling us. And eventually, that aide that brought him in comes over to him and says, Mr. President, we have to go. He's dressed in golf attire. And he's going to go do some tournament, fundraising. A tournament or something. And he says, Mr. President, we need to go because you're going to be late if we don't get going. And he says, okay. I can see him saying that, Lugo. And then he goes back to us. Now we start taking pictures, you know, the photo op. Mm-hmm. And the aide comes back in, Mr. President, we got to go because we're going to be late. And he says, okay, I'll be right there. And he goes back to us. So finally, I'm the second to the last person to take my my photo with him. The colonel is the last one because I trained him. Sir, you're the boss. You're the last one. I'm the second to the last because I'm the chief. So we get the pictures done and all that stuff. And they take him out a door. We are sent to another door. And I had brought my book, An American Life. It's an autobiography. I don't know if you've ever read it. If you haven't, I guess I need to send you a care package. Mm. But anyway, I had brought my book and asked, planning for him to get it signed, to autograph it. And we just didn't have time. So as I'm leaving and he's going out the other door, I asked this other assistant at the desk. I said, ma'am, can I leave my book here? I'll leave you a postage so that if you can get him to sign it and mail it to me, I would certainly appreciate it. Well, he overheard this. So here he is, the former president of the United States sends that aide that was just trying to push him along. And he goes and picks up my book. He takes it to him. And the president stops right there. He doesn't leave. He stops right there and he signs it. Mm-hmm. And he signs it to Chief Bob Vasquez. He didn't ask who is this, because you know how you introduce yourselves. Mm-hmm. I don't know about you. I don't remember names, man. You tell me your name and mm-hmm. 2 seconds later, I don't remember who it is. But anyway, he signs it to me on that date. Best wishes. And that hour or so, Lugo, changed my perspective on leading. You know, I wasn't ever trying to be a tough leader, but maybe sometimes I was a little bit too tough. And what I learned from President Reagan was how to be humble. Those stories were just stories. You know, it wasn't the president of the United States. Here I am. Sit down. Let me tell you. No, it was just him, Ronald Reagan, sharing stories. Mm-hmm. And for him to take the time to be with us and make us a priority, to me, that meant caring, which I think are two huge things for leaders, to be humble and to be caring. How do you express that? Well, he did by staying with us, you know, and remembering my name, you know. Mm-hmm. You've been there where, you know, you've introduced yourself to someone who is, you know, pretty high level leader, and 3 seconds later, they have no idea who you are. Well, okay, I'm not dissing anybody, but the effective leaders remember you. So anyway, thank you, Mr. President, for giving me that perspective, because it has changed me. It changed me. And I hope that I have been more effective, and I hope I've changed other people's lives because of it. I'm reminded of Maya Angelou, who said, I've learned that people will forget what you said. People will forget what you did, but people will never forget how you made them feel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, making you feel something. And you, it doesn't matter, good or bad, right? People will remember how. So President Reagan was an interesting character, right? Because when we think about leadership, and we think about leaders and we examine their leadership, we see, you know, many different things. You know, obviously, and I know we're going to talk about leadership styles and other podcast, but this is a really a good place to start that discussion about leadership styles, because one of the things that you mentioned there or characteristics of his leadership style, we know that you mentioned that he could tell stories, and those are signs of charismatic leaders. They're very good at storytelling, and they can do that very well. You also mentioned that this person was a humble leader, and because he did not have a problem trying to communicate with you or trying to get to you where you were. And that is a characteristic of a servant leader when we think about servant leaders. Although all of us exhibit some of these characteristics, in regards to President Reagan, as we see him in his time as president, obviously, no doubt, we see his charismatic leadership. He was very good, and we talk about charismatic leaders. They use their power to communicate, and that power, they use it to just get to people's minds and hearts, and they're very good at using their charisma to motivate and unite people, and that's a good thing. But then the other thing that we see in him, it was transformational leadership. He obviously, you saw there was a lot of things that changed in our history, we're talking about American history, and you think about the period of time he lived in and he led. We're talking about the Cold War. We talk about economic policies. We talk about tax reform. All of those things took a toll on him and in the nation trying to do that and trying to end the Cold War, right? Trying to unite people to pass legislation, which all of these presidents are trying to do something like that, right? And that is the example of transformational leader, right? He inspires people with a vision, and then he's trying to get a sense of why we need to move away from the status quo. And so that's it. But then the other piece, when you think about the Cold War, he led with this vision that this was going to end, which is visionary leadership, right? It's and he had a, when I'm talking about a vision, it did not mean he had a sentence written on a piece of paper and this was it. I mean, he had a whole narrative as to how that future was going to look. And he worked tremendously hard to try to get to that point where we saw 1989, right? The end of the Cold War. So we saw some of the changes. So tremendous foresight demonstrated through his ability to think long-term and carry out plans. And so when you think about Ronald Reagan, these are three huge, we would say, characteristics of his leadership style. Now, are those important for every single situation? Well, it depends, right? Sometimes you have to adjust. You got to adjust. But the nation had a leader at a point in history where we needed the person to be charismatic, right? To be to exhibit those leadership styles, to transform the country, you know, unite and transform, and then to think long-term. Those things are very difficult, but each one of them also have their different kinds of challenges. Sometimes people think that, you know, people think, oh, he's a visionary leader. Well, visionary leadership is great as long as those people that you have working under you are very good at getting details done, right? Because the visionary leader, the handicap of a visionary leader is that person struggles with day-to-day task, you know, management. And so all of these things are good, but it always depends on your team. And that's when you have a great team that aligns and complements your weaknesses, then you've got to be the leader that you need to be. And then everything else, it's success.
Yeah.
But it all depends.
And in Reagan's case, Lugo, if you remember, he got a lot of flack from his style of leading, like the cabinet. The people that he had in his cabinet were geniuses at what they did. They were incredible. They were hugely effective in what he appointed them to do. And a lot of times the press, I guess the media, whatever you call it at the time, fought against that because it's like, well, he's not making the decisions. Well, he didn't have to. I guess we could use the servant leadership term. He hired someone that could do the job and then let them do it. You know, and I think, you know, in all of my experience, that's what I wanted. You know, I wanted my boss to tell me, Chief, we need to do this, blah, blah, blah. And I'd go do it and stay out of my way, you know, other than if I needed it. You know, if I need more help, I need more time, more money, whatever it is, then I'll come back to you, boss. But otherwise, get out of my way so that I can do it. And I think that goes all the way down, Lugo, even to the person on the floor. If you make him or her responsible for something, or you decide, and the best thing is for both of you to decide that he or she is responsible for something, back off. Let it empower. And we use the term empowerment. I'll use it. I think we do it in the wrong way. But anyway, help that person to be empowered to do it. Get out of the way. Unless, you know, the world is going to go to, you know, everything's going to go fall apart. Well, that's a different thing. You protect them. But otherwise, let them do it, you know, with our kids. They want to be free. You know, I mean, you've just recently been through this process, and I think you're still going through it. Roots and wings. You give them the roots, the foundational stuff, and then let them go, because you cannot control them. And I know you're a control freak because you were an MTI, but get over that.
you got to understand risk, right? Every leader got to do that. You got to understand your resources. What are the kind of capabilities? For example, a lot of people try to think about a servant leader, and you see it all in LinkedIn and stuff like that. I always wonder, right? Because you cannot always be the servant leader. Like, for example, if we had Ronald Reagan be the servant leader, I would think, and we can debate this, but I would think that we would be in trouble. And the reason for it is because we did not need somebody to focus on the needs of the follower. Yes, there is some of that. I mean, we're all in some kind of spectrum, but we did need at that time somebody who was visionary, somebody who was charismatic, and somebody who was transformational, so we could move the entire country from one place to the other, you know, from where we were to the point where we would see that vision come true. And so, and the issue with servant leaders, the issue of focusing too much on the needs of the followers without having been able to see, you know, I call it altitude, understanding what that vision is going to be, is that you run the risk of driving without looking through the front mirror, you know, and so the big windshield you have in front of you.
Yeah.
And so that's a risk. So how can you manage it? You got to manage risk and then understand where can I delegate or not. But then because this is a rule we tell leaders all the time. If somebody else can do this, delegate it, right? So that way you can focus on what is it that the organization is asking you, needs from you. And that's what you need to give the organization. Mm-hmm. Everything else, delegate it. But of course, you cannot just delegate and then, you know, forget. Laissez-faire, that's how we call it. And there's a time for that. Some people, I think we mislabel the laissez-faire. The laissez-faire is just like you're talking about. You know what? You delegate and you forget. And you can do that. That's probably the best leadership style when you have people that are, you know, they know the mission. You can give them rope and they just go, right? They just need space. And so there's just a lot of variables before, you know, there's not one leadership style that's going to get you there.
Yeah.
It's just an analysis of yours and your team. In this case, you know, Ronald Reagan was very effective because I think he was able to give empowering, just like you mentioned, to the team what they needed to do so that he can focus on the best thing that he could do for the nation. And that was for him to do, to be these three things, yeah: charismatic, you know, transformational, and visionary.
Yeah. And it all requires a balance, Lugo. You know, sometimes you do more of this, sometimes you do more of that. A lot of times we think of balance as the scales of justice, 50%, you know, on either side. And that life isn't that way. You know, sometimes you do have to take the bull by the horns and say, no, this is a decision I got to make. Especially in our profession, when we were warriors, you know, when it's time to go to war, there's very little time to negotiate by that time. We got to go do what we got to go do. And life is that way. You know, I mean, sometimes you got to tell your wife where you're going to go have lunch.
Ah, okay.
Now we're getting into reality. Maybe we shouldn't do that.
No, what I would say to that is once you get to that point of no negotiation, you're getting to that point of no negotiation because you already did all the negotiation preemptive. And so plans and everything have been done. And now you are at the point where stuff needs to happen.
Right.
And so every resource has been committed, every action has been determined, every time and second have been determined to an action plan or some kind of action. So it is time now for all of us to get united, get behind and do it.
Yeah.
You know, that's not the time to hesitate. And I think that that's the reason, because at this point, we don't have time. When you get to that point where there's no time and you're executing a moving forward kind of strategy, then it makes sense. It's going to happen. You're going to be successful as long as you did all the negotiation and all the allocating and all the resources and all the planning before you get to the point where now you have no place for a maneuver or no time for maneuvering.
Right. Well, and as we talk about this, and I know we've talked about this before on the show, I think a hugely valuable model is situational leadership. You remember, Blanchard, we taught that in in leadership school. But where you do, where you can shift from one place to the other, which well, we're running out of time, but let's talk about this next week. Back in the day, and I don't know that people still do, I think they do, we used to talk about developing your own leadership style. Well, if you only have one leadership style, you're going to alienate 75% of the people, you know, because all of us are different. And more, I think the youngsters are different and they want you to know that they're different. So let's talk about that a little bit more next week, because
I would love to. I would love to. I mean,
just
that piece of, that piece that you talked about. It's an interesting one, and let's break some, let's be some Mythbusters. If you remember that series,
Mythbusters,
So this is going to be leadership Mythbusters the next time we see each other.
Yeah, but I'd never had time for television, man. I was working. Next week.
Okay, let's do it. Next week.
Thank you for listening. We hope today's topic connected with you and helped you reflect on the work leaders do to get out of a narrow focus on one future and into a broader range of plausible alternatives.
If you'd like to connect with us, find us at leadersandfutures.com.
And if you would like to learn more about leadership and future studies, we have several programs to help you at the Institute for Leadership and Strategic Foresight.
Until next time, be great.